The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? Man, I give you no break. Not even your eyes, you not give you no breaks. Hey, hey. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
I gotta tell you, folks. That anti-police protest that started in Washington Square Park worked its way up, I guess, 6th Avenue to Times Square, made me sick to my stomach. I want to get to that. I also want to talk about, in politics, Trump being down, or maybe even in Iowa. Don't, if you hate Trump, don't celebrate just yet. Don't count him out. I think he's going to come roaring back. Good morning, New York. Good morning, Noam Layden. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Guess who has tickets to the Mets home opener right behind home plate?
Is it me getting me a pair of tickets?
Not you, dude. I'll tell you all about it. I'll tell you. And were you reporting that processed meat gives you cancer? You mean like every ham and cheese sandwich I ever had that's going to give me cancer?
You know, any of that packaged stuff, yeah, potentially. That's
everything gives you cancer. We should play that song. Everything gives you cancer. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, I've been away. I was at Tucson, Arizona. For my, believe it or not, 50th college reunion. I can't believe it, how long ago it was. And seeing some of the old guys again is my second college reunion in a couple of weeks. 10-year-old soul sees the people who are my contemporaries. Says, oh, my God, daddy's granddaddy. But that aside, it was a lot of fun. I'll talk about, later on, I'll tell you about the park that we dedicated for all the students of the university and the larger community there. We saw a great football game, very frustrating. Arizona lost to Washington State 45-42 on a, came down to a onside kickoff at the very end of the game. It was that close, but heartbreaking. But it was really encouraging and to see everybody, see how positive the university has become in terms of its, its academic achievement. They've played such a big role in the whole NASA space program, the Mars probe, all those kinds of things. The university is three times larger than it was when I went there 50 years ago, and really doing a bite, so diverse, wonderful, wonderful to see. But I'm driving home, Erica, Sol, and I are driving home from Kennedy Airport last night. We come down, we come across the RFK Bridge and get on the FDR, and as we're driving south on the FDR, I see over in the river a police boat, one of those inflatable police boats with the blue light flashing, and brought me back to real life immediately. Hadn't seen the New York newspaper in several days. It made me think of the Marine Patrol cops that had been searching for the gun used in the murder of the NYPD officer Randolph Holder, who was shot and killed, as you know, in that shootout with the scumbag on Tuesday night in East Harlem, not far from my apartment. Now, I've dived with the Harbor Patrol cops in those dark, swirling, murky waters right there, same place, East River, near Hell's Gate, you know, doing a story about them. And I knew what they were facing, what the divers were facing. Extremely difficult, daunting conditions, really. The river there, it starts at 20 feet deep. It goes deeper than that, and you got swirling currents. You got the Harlem River and the Long Island Sound and the East River all coming together. It's all kinds of swirl going on there. The bottom is oozing muck. It sucked up centuries of junk, and you know, in its dark embrace, near zero visibility. Basically, you can't see your hand in front of your face, so the search is done by feel rather than by sight. And those cops and those Marine cops, total studs, I'm telling you. And they had vowed to find the weapon that the killer used in shooting Officer Randolph Holder. Shot him right between the eyes in that shootout Tuesday night. So I didn't know. It just reminded me. I didn't know. I Googled the search. And I tell you, before we got home, we got off at 96th Street. I was extremely gratified to see that early Sunday morning, 3 o'clock Sunday morning, divers had recovered, as Noma has been reporting, the weapon that authorities say is consistent. That's the word they're using, consistent with the gun they were looking for. It's a 40 caliber Glock, and it still had a round in the chamber. The weapon, the shell that was found now will be forensically tested to see if they match up with the casings. The casings found near the initial shootout, remember that happened around 102nd Street in the FDR, and then near 120th Street, also in that that river walkway there, where the suspect, the 30-year-old career criminal Tyrone Howard, was finally shot down, wounded by cops. So assuming that the weapon matches, this is a big step in nailing that son of a bitch, that cop-killing creep. Anyway, Sol, Erica, and I get to the apartment. We schlep the bags up the elevator and all that. We get to the front door, and there are the newspapers that pile up, you know, when we've been away. And on top of the pile is the Sunday New York Post. On the front page is the headline, Disgrace. And so the same week, the headline continues, same week a cop is killed, protesters F you to the NYPD. And there's a picture in the on the front page of some guy wearing a hoodie, and he's in a police inspector's face. He's very close to him, giving him the middle finger. It's sickening to me. It was so infuriating. You read about this anti-police demonstration I was talking about. It's led by Quentin Tarantino, prominent Hollywood producer. I mean, he's kind of quirky, but he's made some great movies, as you know. To do it in a thoughtless way and to do it with this kind of timing, I think is really unforgivable. I mean, I'll listen to what you have to say, 866 Geraldo, but here you have protesters screaming obscenities at cops, flipping them the bird. It's an act of total disrespect. And I'm telling you, as a police buff, it would be tough to take in the best of times. In the best of times, this would be tough to take, much less in the same week, 5 days after a hero cop shot and killed by a career criminal jerk-off. I'm telling you, I'm sorry, but some things are just unacceptable. And this morning, I want to talk more about how I just hate this, how black lives only matter to those people when the black life is taken by a cop. And even when it's a black life taken, like police officer Randolph Holder, a black man, it doesn't count because Holder was wearing blue. So it's not a black man killed, it's a blue man killed. And now I hear that my old friend, Reverend Al, has accepted an invitation to speak at Holder's funeral on Wednesday. This morning, I tell you, I think that that is a good thing. I think it's long overdue because this is the bottom line. The bottom line is simply this, that if the minority community, if the black and the brown community, but principally in this case, it's the black community, if they make cops the enemy, that is a sure recipe for more crime, more violence, and the violent end of more black lives. They're saying, rise up, stop police terror. How about stopping the ghetto civil war that's going on? This shootout involving this guy, this Tyrone Howard, there were at least three guns that they've already, this was like the third weapon they got. This was evidently a shootout that the cops came on. And this was a follow-up shootout to a shootout that had happened a couple of days previously in those public housing projects there on the Upper East Side. That's a beautiful neighborhood. I mean, you look out the window, you see the river. It's a million-dollar view in public housing. And yet you've got gangs infiltrating those buildings. You have these young men, and some not so young. This, like I said, the suspect in this case is 30 years old. With how many? Noam, you reported last week. Well, how many arrests?
12 priors.
12 priors. 12 priors. Give me a break. 12 priors, a shootout. You know, I just left Arizona. They had Tombstone and Old Tucson. They do the shootout at the OK Corral. I mean, what? This is like the OK Corral. And to be disrespectful of cops, to blame cops, and to think that cops are responsible for the violence in the inner city, give me a break. It is absolutely factually a lie. It is an absolute patented lie. It is so counterproductive. Look at it this way. Here you have cops doing a dangerous job. Now you have a situation where community activists, and I don't believe they're the majority of the community, but they are a significant minority in the community, these activists, they are portraying police as the enemy. So if you're 12 years old, you're a black kid growing up, a Puerto Rican kid growing up in East Harlem or in Harlem, and you see the grown-ups getting in cops' faces, spitting at them, giving them finger and all the rest of it, then you start disrespecting cops, then the cop stops you because you're acting out in some way, then there's an incident. And in the incident, somehow, some way, somebody gets hurt. I mean, why? That is absolutely the wrong way to make these communities safe. It is to make the cops the enemy is more ghetto suicide. I understand there are excesses involving police. Believe me, I get it. I've covered enough police brutality. I was a civil rights lawyer, and you know that. But to see this total disrespect, to see this militancy, and most importantly, this avoidance of real life. What is killing black men in this country? It is black men killing black men. And the same for Latinos and other ethnic groups. But I'm telling you, cops are not the problem. It is an aspect of it. President Obama, I think, was trying to be measured in his response to the Black Lives Matter movement. But in getting involved as he does, because there's no ghetto in him, there's plenty of ghetto in me, no ghetto in the president, he does it in a clumsy way that only exacerbates the tension between the community and the cops. But this is a terrible situation. It is counterproductive. It is suicidal. And for Quentin Tarantino or anybody else to come in here And to tolerate this kind of obscenity is absolutely outrageous. And that's why Reverend Sharpton, in his remarks on Wednesday, he must be the healer in chief, I mean, of the community. He is a spokesman. He now has a responsibility, and it's about time. I've got to take a break. Welcome back. 26 minutes after 10 o'clock. Those protesters, those anti-police protesters, they were especially razzing a black cop with signs that said, which side are you on? Which side are you on? They're taunting the cops, especially the minority cops. It's just, to me, it is absolutely a recipe for disaster. We're going to start at 866-HERO. Appreciate the calls. Happy Monday. Here's Joe in Westchester. What's up, Joe? What are you thinking about?
Hi, Geraldo. You're 100% right. If these people really cared about black lives, they would focus on the 6,000 homicides that happen in the African-American community every year. The biggest killer of young African-American men from 18 to 34 is murder. And the one point I would disagree with you on, that Quentin Tarantino is a good director or filmmaker. He is a nihilist who glorifies violence and contributes to the problem.
Well, you could say that, but I think that, you know, Pulp Fiction was great movie. It does. I guess it does. It's so cartoonish. I get it.
The Hollywood elite. I mean, how many murders does the average 13-year-old see by the time they're 13? 10,000. No one talks about the Hollywood elite contributing. We live in a nihilist culture that we export across the world and take character out of every community. It's insanity, pure and simple.
I don't disagree with you, brother, and I think an excellent call. Good point. I'm glad you made it. Tony in Newark. Tony, who are you?
How you doing, Geraldo? I'm having issues because as a minority police officer, I get it from both ends.
You are a minority police officer right now?
Yeah, I'm getting ready to retire, man. I've been on here 30 years, and I'm sick of it. You know, I got white police officers actually telling me, you one of the good ones because you went blue. And then I got to get it from the people on the street because they think I'm a traitor.
So what kind of, I mean, I have no way of checking your bona fides. Let's say you're telling me the absolute straight truth. How long you been a cop?
30. In fact, I was a correction officer for 20 of them.
All right, I get it. And what kind of, disrespect do you get from the community? What do they say to you?
They'll say things, oh, man, you know, because I know the gangbangers because, you know, I'm from the neighborhood.
Right.
So, I they give me a little grief. I disagree. You know, like, and then when I lock, you know, when you see somebody do something wrong, like making a turn and, you know, you look at the people, you know who's old, you know, you look at them, you give them a ticket anyway, or you don't give them a ticket. It's up to you whether you want to be a ball buster or not. But, you know, I'm sorry, we get it from both ends.
I totally hear you. I think it is absolutely appalling, the disrespect shown, and I think it's very, very counterproductive. I want more black cops. I want more Latino cops. I think that's a part of the answer. And then to disrespect someone who comes from the neighborhood, as Tony does, and I appreciate your call. Thank you. It's just beyond acceptable. Absolutely. Here in Brooklyn is Jay. What's up, Jay?
Brother Geraldo, I've been following you since Willowbrook, man. I have the ultimate amount of respect for you, brother.
I appreciate that.
Listen,
thank you.
You're welcome. But this situation here with this cop, and I know it was isolated. I mean, not isolated, but situation with Eric Gardner. I was sitting there listening. Oftentimes I hear retired police captains or sergeants calling, and they give their little point of view. When the world, not just the city of New York or the state of New York, but when the world watched that man get murdered on TV, how much respect do you think people are going to have for NYPD? And secondly, we have over 35,000 strong. Where are they? We know the majority of them in Manhattan, but where are they? They've all been taking this little hiatus since they want to turn their back on the Blasio. It ain't the Blasio. Each time that they turn their back and they say, listen, we're going to diminish our responsibility to do our jobs as officers, stuff like this is going to happen. I'm surprised.
Do you really think, Jay, that the cops are laying off, that they're laying low, that they're letting crap happen?
Absolutely. I'll give you a perfect example. The Pope came, right? We got all the homeless folks off the street, correct? I work over by 59 Columbus Circle. Where are the police at? Where are they?
You gotta leave it there. I got the eye. A little scary to think of Hillary Clinton roaring. But Katy Perry, unlike Aerosmith with Donald Trump, Katy Perry has allowed Hillary to take her song. In fact, Katy Perry, one of the many celebrities now flocking to the former First Lady, former Secretary of State, former Senator's campaign banner. Hillary, of course, riding high after the debate where she kicked butt. The Benghazi hearing, I thought, was a major win for her among her Democratic following. And now the polls show her doubling Bernie Sanders in Iowa. I mean, he'll do better in Vermont. He lives next door to New Hampshire, the first in the nation primary. But Hillary is working Iowa, unlike in 2008 when she ran. She dissed Iowa, even thought at some point she was going to pull out of Iowa because it's kind of a quirky state, very heavy in the terms of the demographics with Christian evangelicals. And the liberals in Iowa tend to be very liberal, from the University of Iowa, Iowa State, and the Iowa Ames, the town, is the eastern part of Iowa, very liberal. So she does, you know, that you would expect Bernie Sanders would do well in those areas. He's doing okay, but Hillary is surging. And I think that, so here's what I think about politics, Noam. I think that, you know, you got the fact that Donald Trump is down in the polls. He lost those two big polls. That was breathtaking in a way, because for the first time after 100 days of this campaign, I can't believe it's already been 100 days, it's more time has been spent than is left. You got 3 months left until the Iowa voting, February 1st, and then New Hampshire follows that, and then March 1st. It'll be all decided by March 1st when you have all of the various states. It's kind of like Super Tuesday in terms of March. But here you got Hillary. Here you have Hillary. She is surging. She is powerful. She has finally hit her stride, and I think whether you like her or not, she's going to be the Democratic nominee. And many people don't like her, but if you don't like her, you could vote for the other person, except if you don't like the other person more than you don't like Hillary. And the other person, I still believe, is going to be Donald Trump. Even though Trump has been, you know, with these two tied polls versus Dr. Ben Carson, with Carson up in two and tied in this very last one, I think Trump's just beginning. I think it was a humbling experience for him. His aura of inevitability may have been dispersed. But I believe that the others, I mean, if you're counting on Jeb Bush to surge, I don't think there's any way he's going to get out of this this funk that he is in. He's languishing for good reason. Marco Rubio, everybody's talking about Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz now as alternatives to Donald Trump in Iowa. They think Carson will fade because he's an outsider. I still think that, you at your peril, discount the fact that Trump is very popular. He has not yet begun to spend a single dollar, a single dollar. When he does, it's going to have a powerful impact, I believe. Now, if you feel differently, let me know. If you think that the Trump phenomenon has begun to fade and you think that he's going to go away, I want to hear from you. I want to have a political discussion for the rest of this morning because I think we are at a pivotal time. Tomorrow night, Hillary's going to be on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And I'm telling you, Noam, I think that she is going to keep the pedal to the metal now. And I would expect that the whole women's movement and all that, her basic base is going to feel and is feeling their oats right now. And I think they're going to rally behind her in a very big way. And she's going to keep it going. She was much more pleasant in the Benghazi hearings, I think, than much more measured and composed, maybe more than composed, more than pleasant. But there is no doubt to me that she's going to be the nominee, and she's on a roll right now. No?
You know, and you watch this, and the minute she trounces Bernie Sanders and maybe those first couple primaries outside of New Hampshire, everybody falls into place. I think much more easily in the Democratic side than on the Republican side behind Donald Trump. She'll be able to bring the party faithful all in. But first, she has to get by those first couple primaries, which could be tough.
All right. No, Crash, play Hillary and Bernie Sanders. Let's hear one saying, Hillary saying that she's not shouting, Bernie saying that she got it all wrong.
I've been told to stop, and I quote, shouting about gun violence. Well, first of all, I'm not shouting. It's just when women talk, some people think we're shouting.
Well, you know, all that I can say is I am very proud of my record on women's issues. I certainly do not have a problem with women speaking out. And I think what the secretary is doing there is taking words and misapplying them.
All right, I don't know. Noam, was Bernie Sanders saying that Hillary was shouting? Who was saying she was shouting?
I don't know. That's the first time I've heard either one of those bites. So.
All right, so people have an attitude about her. I don't know who said she was shouting, but when a woman raises her voice, she's shouting. When a man raises his voice, he's being assertive. But I really do think that what came through with Hillary Clinton in the last week is the fact that she is a very competent person, that she has deep experience. Now, what also came through last week is how she absolutely played a pivotal role in creating a situation in the Middle East that has been disastrous from America's point of view. And I do believe that as distasteful as I think Trey Gowdy, the sweaty hatchet man heading up the Benghazi committee, as distasteful as I think he and his godfather, Daryl Issa, and, you know, that whole Freedom Caucus is in the Congress of the United States, they really did, the Benghazi committee really did, in a way that I had not seen in the seven previous investigations, they really did reveal how, and we had Jack Kane, remember we had Jack Kane, the four-star general, retired, the man who was the deputy or vice chief of staff of the United States Army. He laid it all out, Benghazi and Libya generally. They were getting a disproportionate number of alarms about pending Islamic terrorism and violence. And Hillary Clinton, in her watch, did not heed those many calls for more help in Libya. And I do believe that that goes to the quality of her leadership and management skills, without a doubt. But I also believe that in substance, when you see those Benghazi hearings and take it as a totality, there is no doubt in my mind but that Hillary Clinton routed the people, the interrogators, the people who were really questioning her. I think that Hillary is going to be the candidate, and I also think that if you're counting Trump out, it was not an accident that he built that fortune. Here's Richard in Pennsylvania. What do you think, Richard? Thanks for calling 866 Arola. What's up?
Yeah, hi Arola. Good morning. First, give Steve a raise. Number two, Donald Trump is going to self-destruct with his ego and his tongue. And three, I'm really not happy with you, Geraldo, when you give no credence to the Hillary lie on Benghazi. There's four families there that lost their loved ones. How can you dismiss that?
I don't dismiss that, and I think it's very disrespectful of you to even allege that. I mean, that BS. That's what you just said. What you just said was such bull. It's such bull, and that's exactly why the Republicans have overplayed their hands on Benghazi. You're not gonna talk over me on my show, brother. But when you accuse someone of doing something that leads to the deaths, the murders of four Americans, that is a bridge too far. That is exactly the kind of overstatement and exaggeration and outright misrepresentation that has allowed the Benghazi hearings to fade into irrelevance, rather than concentrating on what is now proven about her not heeding the requests for security and spinning it afterwards by not focusing on the before and the after, but rather choosing to focus on the night that they were murdered. You do a disservice to the families of those victims that you say you are advocating their cause. You do a disservice to them and you distort history. And it's just exactly what allows her to take the Benghazi hearings and make it a political victory. Because you just can't get out of your head that she didn't kill them. Al-Qaeda killed them. And to say the blood on her hands and all that stuff, it is so exaggerated. It is so distorted. It is so untrue. Robert in Long Island, what are you thinking about, buddy?
Well, I'm thinking about Donald Trump, right? He looks like a very, very refreshed person. And not only that, he has transformed himself to a more moderate person. And I think he's there to win now. And you know what? This is a person that think well ahead. He had planned all of this to kill the opposition with advertisement. So I think he's in the best shape he ever has been now.
He's in the best shape now.
Yes.
What you speak, you sound like you are in. From where are you from?
Say that again.
Where are you from? Where were you born? I'm just curious.
I was born in the Dominican Republic.
And you don't think that his statements on Latinos are offensive? Don't you think that excludes him from the vote for many thoughtful people?
I tell you one thing. I understood his message the right way since he spoke. He spoke about illegal immigrants. And not only that, if he, people don't know this, the people that suffer the most are the legal immigrants that are here, because the illegal immigrants have taken away all of our jobs. We cannot send our kids to school. We cannot even take our kids to the park. The parks are full of kids, and there is no space for our kids to go to the school. We have
all right, Robert. I hear you, brother. I do. But I have to say there are many people from the DR who were undocumented and who got amnesty from Ronald Reagan that helped make Washington Heights and some of those areas that are heavy Dominican the thriving neighborhoods that they are. I've got to take a break. I'll take your calls. How you all doing today? Let me ask Frank in Brooklyn. What's up, man? What are you thinking about?
Good morning, Geraldo, and how are you?
I'm good.
Beautiful. Okay, so what was on display to me was, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the most Academy Award-winning performance that you could ever imagine.
Could have been. Could have been. You may be right about that. Maybe it was all acting.
Listen, there's always going to be an opinion. Some people see it one way, see it another. But as I look back on this woman's career, I'm trying to see one thing that she completed, or one thing that she did, or one thing that was for the good. Her entire career is just shrouded in too much nonsense. I cannot look at her and at myself and say that I can believe anything she said.
Now, what do you think of her husband? Just curious. What do you think of Bill Clinton?
Bill Clinton, politician-wise, I'd say he's about a 7 or 8 on the Richter scale, although he did have his issues. I mean, but by and large, he's a good behind-the-scenes. You
know, and what number, if you give her husband a 7 or 8, what do you give her?
Oh, in all fairness and good conscience, a zero.
A zero. I think that it's very difficult to find concrete achievements. She kind of like followed the flow when she was a United States Senator. She did a pretty good job constituent service in New York. But it's interesting you mentioned Bill doing so well. He was with her in Iowa. I think you're going to see a lot more of Bill side by side with his bride. Is back. And backing up Elvis, the London Philharmonic Orchestra. You know, they're taking all these dead artists now and they're resurrecting their work and they're restaging it. I mean, they got Elvis there. They're remixing all the old hits Elvis made with the London Philharmonic. You have Red Fox and Andy Kaufman, the two long-dead comedians. They're coming back as holograms. I don't know. When I'm gone, you could put me on as a hologram.
I keep the show going.
who'll know?
Lois and, in Ron Conkema, you're on
the air. Exactly. You just put in like a computer-generated, we'll put in the Lois, and the rest of it could be my voice from back when. Anyway, there's so much going on in politics. What I want to talk about, I mean, I got a couple of things, you know, one of which is the fact that Marco Rubio has stopped going to the United States Senate. He stopped appearing. I mean, he's missed 50-plus votes now. And whether or not that matters. I mean, he hates the Senate. He wants out of the Senate, obviously. He's impatient. He wants to bail. I mean, should that be counted against him, that he's now all in for this presidential race or not? But, I mean, first I want to talk about something much more volatile. And that is, and I'll get to your calls momentarily, 866-Geraldo. But it's Dr. Ben Carson's Seventh-day Adventist faith. Now, I'm the kind of guy, like, being a half-Catholic, half-Jewish, my mom says I grew up confused, theologically speaking. It is an interesting position, though, to be in, to reflect on the religiosity, if that's the word, of other folks. I mean, wondering how their actions are guided by their faith. Like Trump, I consider Trump to be, even though he's a Presbyterian, he's kind of like a New Yorkitarian. It's a whole different, it's a theology based on pragmatism, and I don't know if he believes in heaven or hell or all that. You know, I don't know what I believe in when it comes to that. I mean, we could have a whole show about that. But Dr. Ben Carson, very firm. I mean, there was a Garden of Eden. There is a heaven and a hell. The world was created in 6 days, and on the seventh day, the Lord rested and all the rest. I mean, having a president who believes literally in the Old Testament, I mean, that's, I don't know when we had that last. I'm not sure if we've ever had that, particularly in what is designed to be a secular republic. I mean, you had, you know, the founders very keen on separating church and state. Here you have Dr. Ben Carson. It is, in some ways, the debate over that is reminiscent of the debate. Remember the debate over, I mean, those of you who are old enough or those who are history buffs and check out politics, remember when people were suspicious of John F. Kennedy because he was the first Catholic, he became the first Catholic president. And everybody wondered or worried that Rome, quote unquote Rome, what they really mean is the Vatican, would be guiding all of American foreign policy through the Catholicism of the president of the United States. Obviously, it didn't work out that way. But now you have Dr. Ben Carson, who is making a hell of a run. I mean, let's face it, nobody, I mean, it's certainly not your humble host here. Nobody believed that Dr. Ben Carson would be at the top of the pack. You know, even in Iowa, with all the Christian evangelicals, the fact is there are plenty of other candidates vying for that Christian evangelical vote, principally Ted Cruz. Remember, Rick Santorum won the Iowa caucuses back in 2012. But Dr. Ben Carson's religion and his belief and his theological, philosophy is unusual. I mean, a Garden of Eden? I mean, really? I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe there was a Garden of Eden. I don't know. Maybe the world was created. Maybe God's days were, each day was a billion years or a trillion years. I mean, who knows? What I'm saying is maybe there is some scientific underpinning to some of these beliefs. I have any earthly idea or spiritual idea for that matter. But should it affect your feelings about Dr. Ben Carson, the fact that all the Christian evangelicals, not all, but a good number of them, if these polls are to be believed, in Iowa at least, are flocking to his banner. Remember the Deep South, where there are a lot of these early primaries, including South Carolina, but you go through all of the Deep South states, the old Confederacy, you know, there is a very heavy religious vote. I mean, Dr. Ben Carson now with the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, and, you know, the world in 6 days and all the rest of it. He has strong appeal to those voters, but in the modern world, how will that affect his judgment? I mean, obviously, he's also a scientist and a highly evolved modern man, but he is deeply religious. On the other hand, the Clintons, I don't remember hearing much about the Clintons. I don't remember the Clintons going to church much. I'm sure they did. I don't remember Ronald Reagan being particularly religious. I don't remember George Bush being, H.W. or W. Bush being particularly religious. But now if you have this real faith-based presidency, I mean, how's that going to affect the world? Anyway, talking about that right now, or whatever you got on your mind, as long as it's politics. Here's Maureen in the Bronx. Hi, Maureen. What are you thinking about today? Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Geraldo. I just wanted to make a few points about something you mentioned earlier.
Sure.
You were talking about Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And I think they do have a point. I just think they're misdirected. I don't think their anger should be directed at the cops. The cops, after all, have to enforce laws enacted by the legislature and the New York City Council. One man had called earlier, and he talked about Eric Garner. What's very disturbing is that Eric Garner was arrested for selling loose cigarettes. Those
right.
are laws that are enacted, and the cops have to enforce the law enacted by the New York City Council, the legislator, the governor. And then we look at Hillary Clinton. You know, obviously what she's doing is really wrong. She had not given cover to those men who asked for help in Benghazi. Her email server was located in a bathroom. All, you know, this important information was being accessed by, you know, foreign governments all over the world, and nothing happens to her. You look at Lois Lerner. Obviously, she was the IRS was going after people who disagreed with the government's policies.
I haven't even mentioned that. Hold on.
I know,
just, I'm going to come back to you, Maureen. Don't go away. But I just want to – Lois Lerner, who headed up the IRS, remember, nobody is going to be criminally charged. That whole IRS scandal that occupied and obsessed talk radio for a year – the IRS scandal has gone no place. It is zero criminal responsibility.
Happened. These people that were doing nothing wrong, that were like, you know, organizing clubs or whatever you want to call them, were under attack because they were conservative groups.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Right, and nothing happens to her.
And nothing happened.
This is what the Black Lives Matter people are looking at, but they're misdirected. It's not the cops. It's the way laws are enacted by your New York City legislator, but you know Eric Gardner.
But what would you do? What would you do on these minor crimes? What would you do, Maureen?
Well,
now,
look,
would you turn a blind eye to that
at.
Stuff?
It doesn't matter if you're black or white. It seems if you're rich and politically powerful, nothing happens to you. Look at the history of Al Sharpton. He's leading people. He's getting paid by, you know, to go on the street or not go on the street. Charles Rangel, what was he doing? He had all these illegal apartments. He gets yelled at in the well of Congress. How come my kids that have like 10 tickets for, you know, making a right on a Tuesday in Manhattan, you know, will get arrested if they start arguing with the cop? And these people get away with murder.
Okay, hold on. Don't go away, Maureen. Punch Stan in. Let's bring Stan into the conversation with Maureen. Stan, you heard Maureen. What's your reaction?
I was going to talk about Hillary, but I think she's right. I think she makes a solid point, you know. But I'm more worried as to why Sharpton is there. I think that's going to be a crucial day when he's there and the cops are all standing around. I think there's going to be some heavy heat at that ceremony, at that
at the funeral?
Oh, absolutely.
Maureen, Maureen, you like the fact that Sharpton's going to the cops' funeral, don't you?
You know, Sharpton has a long history of being a raving lunatic.
But he does have a following.
He does. I mean, look at
he does have a following.
I mean, he owes millions to the IRS, and nothing happens to him.
I remember David Dinkins, Mayor David Dinkins, credited. I got you.
I didn't pay my tax.
I got you. But David Dinkins credited Al Sharpton with helping end the Crown Heights riots.
Look at, you know, the people are not idiots. We're watching the news every day. No matter how they spin it, we know the facts.
All right, Stan, what do you think is going to happen with the – I got you. Wait, well, hold on, Maureen. Stan, what do you think about the black vote? Who are the black people going to vote for?
This concerns me. I'm hearing from a lot of friends of my African-American community. You know, they're looking at Ben Carson a second and third time, and they may be taking votes away from Hillary. It could be a factor if things gets – if he gets to a point where he gets the, wins primaries and gets the – it could be a serious factor against her. Absolutely.
Well, that doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me. I think that Ben Carson's a very honorable man. It's just
there you go.
All right, what, Maureen?
You had mentioned Ben Carson and his religious belief system that guides his opinions and it guides his decisions. Right?
Right.
And we know that the guy was a
neurosurgeon.
A neurosurgeon.
Brilliant man.
Johns Hopkins, a pediatric neurosurgeon, you know, and this guided him, this moral belief system guided him successfully through his career to do the right thing by every single human being he came in contact with. I have no problem with that.
Okay, Maureen, thanks. What an
like
excellent call.
I would like to ask all these other people running what guides their decisions and their belief systems.
Fabulous question. I got to let you go. I'm out of time for this segment. 866 Geraldo. It's 18 minutes after 11 o'clock. Stan, thank you, too. I'll be back after this.
I have a breaking story. Donald Trump has fallen to second place behind Ben Carson. We informed Ben, but he was sleeping.
Oh, Trump doing a lack of energy hit on Ben Carson. He did the same thing with Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush, in that case, it worked magnificently. I mean, from a ruthlessly political point of view, Trump cut the legs out from Jeb Bush, former Florida governor, brother of the president, son of the president, odds-on favorite, rich in terms of his bank account when this thing started. Now, over the weekend, you heard how Jeb Bush has been cutting down staff, you know, paring down his operation, firing people, transferring people, getting them out of their central headquarters in Miami, Florida. Jeb Bush now, is he still the odds-on favorite? I don't know. Here, you got a clip. Let's see. Here's Jeb on Trump.
If this election is about how we're going to fight to get nothing done, then I don't want anything. I don't want any part of it. I don't want to be elected president to sit around and see gridlock just become so dominant that people literally are in decline in their lives. That is not my motivation. I got a lot of really cool things that I could do other than sit around being miserable, listening to people demonize me and me feeling compelled to demonize them. That is a joke. Elect Trump if you want that.
You know, that sounds to me very, I don't know, submissive in a way. It sounds to me like he's resigned to losing. It doesn't sound like the either the cadence or the power or the charisma of a winner. It sounds to me like Jeb is has been beaten down by Donald Trump. I mean, no, you must see in Jeb almost the pathos of someone who had the great opportunity, but because of Trump's, you know, overwhelming personality, Jeb just got beaten out of the race.
You know, and the optics of him going back to his mom and dad and brother for help, I just thought that was just weird. You know, I don't want to hear that he's going back to them. I mean, I know full well behind the scenes they're helping him, but to make such a public thing of that, I'm going to go and ask mom and dad how to fix this thing because it's not going the way it was supposed to. I don't know. I didn't think that was a smart move on his campaign's part.
Linda from Detroit is calling. Hi, Detroit. What's
Hi.
Up?
I love Donald Trump. I love that he.
What do you love? What do you love about Trump?
I love that he's in there shaking things up. I don't know. I might feel a little bit uneasy about him as our commander in chief, but I love that he's in there shaking things up. And
What do you think of Ben Carson?
I think the Trump Carson ticket would be awesome.
I do too. I think it would be awesome. But, you know, between the two of them, you don't have a minute's worth of governmental experience.
Yeah, but, you know, there's experience and then there's experience. As a businessman,
I hear that, too. Look at Marco. That's right. I got you, and I appreciate it. Look at Marco Rubio, ladies and gentlemen. So here is a sitting senator. I think he's still in his first term. He's a sitting senator. He's running for president already. They say he's been running for president since he was 11 years old. But here is someone with great governmental experience. He was the Speaker of the Senate, the state Senate in Florida. I'll look up the exact resume. But he was deeply involved in state government. Then he went into the United States Senate. He's been campaigning for president ever since. Now he's not even going. So you talk about the importance of Trump and Carson not being experienced, but what is the worth of governmental experience when you look at a guy like Senator Marco Rubio? He doesn't even go to the Senate. He doesn't even go to the Senate. He's a guy who's Speaker of the Florida House of Representatives. Okay, so then he got into the United States Senate, and now he's not even going. He's missed 50 votes. He hates the United States Senate. So how important is that experience? And isn't that why we reject it? Hasn't Marco Rubio, isn't he showing us the way? He's saying that, look, I don't want to have anything to do with this this body. I mean, in a way, Jeb Bush is right about gridlock and about nothing getting done and about the demonization of the other side. So given the fact that these lifelong politicians are engaged in and have been engaged in minimizing the effectiveness of their role in government, why not reject them? Why not go to somebody on the outside? Someone who is not going to be lethargic or fall into the demonization and the fracturization of, is that a word? Of government. I think we need someone with a fresh point of view. We need somebody from the outside.
I have to admit to you, what's driving us crazy is you guys. We love you. But, you know, serious press people would say, well, we have on good authority from a very close friend of Joe Biden's that he's going to announce tomorrow, or we have on good authority that he's not going to run, or good. And that used to drive me crazy. And so part of it was I'd get up some mornings and say, let's just end this thing, man. We don't have time to. I don't want to go keep getting buffeted like this.
I know you talked to your son, Beau. about running for president. What did he want you to do?
The first thing I'd like to do, and you're being very polite the way you're asking me the question, because some people have written that, you know, Bo on his deathbed said, Dad, you've got to run. And there was this sort of Hollywood moment that, you know, nothing like that ever happened.
All right, that was Joe Biden, who was excellent on 60 Minutes. He was so deeply affecting. I've only seen clips. I was in the air for most of the show, but when I landed and looked at the clips, and this morning you look at the guy and you say, well, he could have been a great president, Joe Biden. I don't know if he could have been a great president. He was a great second, you know, in line, I was going to say second banana. That would have been disrespectful. I guess he would have been a good leader, a solid leader, a prudent person, a reasonable person who had a normal reaction to the tragedy that his family endured. But I told you there was never any intention. It just seems to me he could have ended the drama a lot sooner if he wanted to. But he would have been a fine president. I don't think he ever would have won. But, you know, had he in any way, shape, or form made it to the Oval Office, I believe that he would have done well there. And he's just such a you know, an affecting guy, very sincere. But Joe Biden is history now. A lot of others are not. Hillary Clinton, I really do believe, still going to be our Democratic nominee, our Republican nominee, up for grabs. Rubio in the hunt, obviously, but it's really all the news still about Trump and Carson. Trump's lead over everyone else everywhere but Iowa is huge. In Iowa, the latest poll is that Trump and Carson tied at 27 apiece. So between the two of them, they get over 50% in the Iowa caucuses. That leaves 48% for the other, 14 candidates. He is Harry on Staten Island. Thanks for calling 866-HERALDO. Harry, what do you got on your mind, bud?
Hey, Geraldo. How are you?
Excellent.
I just want to expound a little. Earlier, a caller had called about, said, where you were off on Hillary. And I didn't agree with, you know, his assessment of it. I listen to you all the time, and I definitely think you're missing the mark on Hillary.
All right, tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay. You've spoken about this Benghazi thing, and you've thrown it under the, you know, under the rug, and you said it means nothing, it's hocus pocus. All right, I'll grant it, a lot of it is. But doesn't integrity and character count anymore? It's pretty obviously that she knew it was a terror attack. And when it came down to it, when she stepped up to the plate, she chose the establishment, and she chose to lie. Now, let me just paint a little scenario for you. Let's say she chose to take the high road and say, you know what, I'm going to tell the truth, and went against what the establishment wanted. And maybe it costed her her job. What do you think this election would mean for her now if she lost her job because she chose to tell the American people the truth?
I think it's bigger than that. I think you're onto something, Harry. But it's even bigger. Hold on. Let me say. It's even bigger than you suggest, because let's remember the timing here. September 11th, 2012, you had the attacks on the consulate and the four fatalities, the loss of Chris Stevens, the ambassador, and the three other heroes. You had something huge happening on September 11th, 2012. So on September 12th, 2012, they start talking about the video. What happened? There was the mob incited by the video, a spontaneous uprising, and that became the Obama administration story for the next week and for the rest of the campaign. Remember, the election was only 2 months away. Less than two months away. So what would have happened? Hold on, let me finish, man.
Okay.
So what would have happened if Hillary Clinton at that point said, you know, President Obama's main campaign theme that he is keeping us safe from terrorism and he killed Osama bin Laden is wrong, is false, is only a partial truth, because look how terrorists are still around. Look how Al-Qaeda is still active. Obama could have lost the election.
Exactly.
Obama could have lost the election. If Hillary said anything, Obama would have lost the election. Now, to me, if I was the Republican candidate running against Hillary Clinton, you can bet your bottom dollar that would be my entire pitch. My entire pitch would be, how are you going to vote for someone who lied, or if not a lie, misrepresented or consciously told a fable to the American people so her boss could get reelected? Why vote for her? Where's the integrity? I think you're onto something.
Exactly.
But that's the problem.
Election,
but hold on. Let me give you my punchline. That's the problem with people focusing on something that is false. And the false narrative that we could have saved those people once the attack began has been disproven, and that casts everything else into disrepute.
I agree with you. They should be focusing on the fact that she chose to take politics instead of the truth.
Amen. Amen.
If she had told the truth, let me tell you, I would have even voted for her to be president.
All right. Well, Harry, you and I should be the campaign manager for the Republicans. It was an excellent point, and that's what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen. That's the reality. You see how, and that's the problem with cable TV and AM radio, talk radio. By focusing on something that is so glaringly hurtful and is so demonstrably untrue, we have lost the opportunity to talk about the truth. The Benghazi committee, when you think about whatever you think, you cannot deny that it was a deeply, extremely partisan experience for the American people watching. If you hated Hillary before, you still hate her. If you loved her before and you hated the Republicans, that's still your feeling. But by focusing on the false narrative, the stand-down order that never was, the AC-130 gunship that did not exist, the armed drone help with the Hellfire missiles that never existed, by focusing on that crap, you overlook what Harry has astutely brought out. This could have swayed the 2012 election. Instead of talking about Mitt Romney and the 47% and all the rest of that stuff in the last 2 months, Mitt Romney could have been leading the charge saying, they did not keep us safe. Terrorists killed our people. Al-Qaeda is still alive and well. That could have made the difference. And that's what I'm talking about. I just want you to get where I am. I'm coming from. It's Frank in New York. What's up, Frank? Thanks for calling 866
or other. Good morning, man. How are you doing?
Good, man. Good. What's up? What are you thinking about?
Okay, I'm thinking about, I was in your office, first of all, 2 weeks ago, and I sat in your chair. I know where you are, 17 ago, right?
That's it. How is my chair?
Listen, I'm calling you right now from 42nd Street between 7 and 8th Avenue, next to McDonald's.
So bring me a Big Mac. They serve breakfast. Give me the breakfast. They serve breakfast all day now.
You got it. That's it.
McDonald's sales are up for the first time in a couple of years. So anyway, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is this, Orlando. First of all, what did Hillary Clinton did for anyone in this country? I mean, as one of Obama's team, this whole government is a collapsed government. Lying and deceiving, manipulation. And Donald Trump is not that kind of person. The whole world knows. He's an honest man, hardworking, genius, productive. Not only like he has the energy, physical energy, but the mental energy, ambition, everything. We know what he has accomplished. What did this politician do so far for America? Except lying and deceiving.
Frank, let me ask you a question. Did you take a picture of yourself in my seat?
I did not.
Oh, man.
Because Marty told me, oh, your phone is no good.
Okay.
He took a lot of shots. And did you see my painting?
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
I'm going to send you more painting because, my painting is like, I put a lot of ideas in my painting.
Well, I want to see your pictures. Frank, I gotta let you go. What's your last name so people can buy your pictures?
Manzorati.
Okay, look for Frank Manzorati's paintings. I'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Gonna take one more call from Steve in Greenwich, and then we'll gonna give you my final thoughts for the day. Steve, what's up, bud?
Oh, hey, Geraldo. It's supposed to be a great show. And just to add to the other comments, I think what really disturbed me about the false narrative that the administration, Hillary, went on with for weeks was that, the filmmaker was arrested. And, I'm thinking about, his First Amendment rights were really violated. And she knew that. I mean, she knew it was a false narrative.
Wait, hold on. Find out what happened to that guy. We look it up. Yeah. What happened to the guy with the video? I know he was I interviewed him. I interviewed him out on the West Coast. Find out what happened to that criminal case.
That's something that happened to the police state, the KGB or, in Venezuela. And to have a guy
but
arrested
I think his
fraud,
knew
he was wrong.
Right, but I as I recall, I don't remember why he was arrested, but I do remember that there was a lot of all the actors in his film were really, really ticked off at him because he never told them that his film was insulting to the Prophet Muhammad, and it was insulting to the Prophet Muhammad. It was a terrible, sacrilegious film.
But
and
to go to jail for that?
No, you don't go to jail for that. I don't know what his crime was, but I'll definitely check it out. Hopefully, I'll get it before we get off the air. But I will check it out. It was and remember also when you call it a false narrative in Libya, as I do, and it was, and they could have used it to great effect, I think, on Mitt Romney's behalf in 2012. Remember though that what happened in Egypt the day before, what happened in Benghazi, what happened in Cairo, Egypt, when they stormed our embassy in Cairo. That was definitely related to the video, and they had problems also. They had violence in Pakistan, in one or more of the cities in Pakistan and elsewhere throughout the Islamic world based on that video, that insulting video. So the narrative was plausible because it was provably the cause of what happened in Egypt, where I don't think anybody died. Remember, they stormed the walls of the compound of the embassy in Cairo. Because it did happen there. There was plausibility to the Obama administration misrepresentation that what happened in Benghazi was not a planned terror attack. And also, I mean, again, when we get down to honesty here and hard, cold facts, what happened in Benghazi was not, it was a planned Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda subgroup attack on our compound in Benghazi. True. But the New York Times reporting and other reporting that I saw indicated that it wasn't like they'd been planning it for months and months. It was kind of like, several days, and they knew the ambassador was there. It was tactical rather than a strategic attack. I promised that was my last call, but I'm going to take one more. Nancy in Great Neck. Hi, Nancy. Hello, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy. You're on. What's up?
Okay, hi. Geraldo, Hillary Clinton ignored 600 requests from Benghazi Ambassador Stevens for better security. She is unfit to be president. Zero leadership. She said she'd never. What kind of a person is she? She could never be president. She ignored 600 requests. And she said she didn't know about them. 600 requests? Come on. That means she's a terrible Secretary of State. And she is to
blame. Well, let me ask you this, Nancy. I got one question. One question I have to ask.
Secretary of State.
Okay, I got it. I got your point. But you've got to answer this one question for me.
Can't be a leader.
Do you want to answer one question for?
And Trump will concentrate on that.
Can I ask you a question? Did you hate her before the hearings?
No.
You used to like her until what you saw?
No, but I know she's. I know her from 20 years. We all do. She's a big liar.
Did you ever vote for her?
But she's to blame. The buck stops with her.
Okay, I got it. Okay, I found out what happened to Nicola Vassilet, the guy, the Egyptian-born Christian who put together the film, who made the film. In 2013, he was released from prison, to serve his remaining sentence in a halfway house. He pled guilty to four charges against him. The charges were not related to the film. Let me see. What were the charges against him? Arrested in Los Angeles, charged with violating terms of his probation. What was he on probation for? I don't know. But it seemed like the guy was kind of a scummy guy. I mean, it wasn't like... His film was Innocence of Muslims. There was nothing innocent about him. He was arrested by the feds September 2012, and he pled guilty on November 7th, 2012. His probation included using aliases, using the internet without prior approval from his probation officer. I don't know what
they
what
put him behind bars to appease the Muslim world. That's the reason they put him behind bars.
Yeah, it could be. Thanks, Noam. See you tomorrow.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming?
Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.